One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Is going on out to everybody, and thank y'all so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, sweating to death down here as summer has fired up, but I'm not the only one down here. The man, the myth, the legend, the fella that hates the heat as much as me, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, it is blistering
Bam.
Here.
Quickness.
Skeleton Studios, but you know, I'm ready for it because it's June.
I mean, hey, better than last year.
Everybody complains. I'm like, look, it's June in Texas. This is normal. This is the way it's supposed to be. It's a lot greener than it normally is this time of year. I'm enjoying it before it gets all burnt up and everything's brown. But yeah, no, it's doing good. Kids are out of school. Me and Luke and the wife went and watched the new Transformers movie.
You were bragging about how good it was.
Listen.
Just stop. No. We're going to move. No. They didn't tune in to listen to your movies.
I'm just
all they want to do, thumbs up.
If you want to save your money, I would go see something different. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, I'm proud of you for that.
Yeah.
For what you told me, I'm very proud of you for saying, just putting it that way.
Look, Luke liked it, so I'm glad he enjoyed it. And there's another Pixar movie coming out, Elementals. I'm going to go see that because I enjoy the Pixar films.
I do too.
I think they're good, you know? I think sometimes that Hollywood like takes a series and just keeps going a little bit too long. Like I like Transformers. When I was a kid,
Fast and Furious.
When I was a kid, there was not just Transformers. There was GoBots. Remember GoBots?
Yeah.
Like, GoBots were if you were broke, right?
That's what
your
I
parents
had.
Didn't have much money. I had GoBots.
We had GoBots.
And then later I got Transformers.
Yeah.
But Transformers were like big holidays, like Christmas. I remember my favorite was Soundwave, right? Because you could put the different cassettes out there.
Uh-huh.
For those of y'all don't know what cassettes are, I can't talk.
So
it's like used to play music before, you know, MP3s and CDs or cassettes.
The one where you had to wind them up with a pencil.
Yeah, that was my favorite back in the day. But he's got a whole list of movies that are coming out. We got the new Indiana Jones coming out in like 2 weeks. I can't wait for that.
I'm sure, yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan.
I know we're going to go see this.
You have to. I mean, how can you not go see Indiana Jones?
It's got to be his last one, right?
It has to be.
Isn't Harrison like 75?
95.
106?
114.
I thought so. Yeah,
exactly.
Dude, look, I'm all for, like we've already established, I'm a huge Harrison Ford fan. I just hope he doesn't break his hip or do something crazy while he's out there doing it. Because didn't he get messed up doing Star Wars like he broke his arm or something like that?
I'm sure.
Man. Mr. Glass.
Well, no, he's just Mr. Old. That's what happens. Everybody turns to glass eventually.
How dare you? How dare you? Philly, I got something I got to share with you real quick before we go any further.
Sure.
Because of the way, again, this line, the heading, when the minute I saw it, I'm like, I gotta tell Kyle about this. There's a crawler humanoid was encountered in western Idaho by some hunters.
Okay.
They were hunting jackrabbits.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So listen to this. Imagine seeing this while we're out doing a little predator hunting, right? Just imagine this. It says this incident occurred in western Idaho. The account comes from a very close family friend of my grandfather's named Neil. He's the kind of person that wouldn't lie about something like this, and I honestly believe this story. The story was told while I was on a hunting trip with my grandfather, my father, and a few of my uncles, and Neil, and one or two other folks. I don't know exactly how the conversation led to talking about strange and unknown things in the wild, but here we were. Now, this was a few years ago, so forgive me if I've forgotten a few of the details, but Neil's story goes like this. A few years back in the early 90s, one of my friends had gotten permission to go and hunt jackrabbits on another one of my friend's properties out in a very remote part of western Idaho. I can't remember exactly where, but they had come an hour or two from the Weiser area. Now, the property was out in the middle of the desert, quite far from any small town or city. We entered on the north side of the property over a cattle guard and through a gate. The property was kind of in a valley and was divided into a very large, flat plain, mostly on one half, and then on the other was a very large hill that spanned the length of this private land. It had an elevation of probably 200 to 300 feet, give or take. Well, that night, we'd been working the flatter part of the land with the spotlight on my truck and flashlights in hand, shooting the rabbits. It was a clear night, and the moon was probably 3/4 full, so it was relatively easy to see some elements of the property by this moonlight. We started a little after dusk, and by this time, it was about midnight, and we were 2/3 of the way down the length of the property when we heard this unhuman, blood-curdling scream come from the eastern side of where the hill ran. So I looked at my friend and we just both froze. We were at the truck using the spotlight looking for rabbits when it happened. So we were probably 200 or 300 yards from the base of the hill. So the top of the hill was probably another 100 or so yards from the base to the top. So as I started to scan the hillside with the scope, this creature screamed again. I then followed the sound and I saw a tall, lanky, humanoid figure standing with the upper half of its body silhouetted against the sky at the top of the hill. I had fired a shot toward it from my .22, knowing it wouldn't make it to the creature, but I wanted to try and get it to move up and over the hill so I could get a better look at it. But instead, this thing started to move down the hill towards us. Right after that happened, booked it to the closest side of the property, found a gate, shot the lock off, and drove away from there as fast as we could. To this day, I still don't know what I saw, but it scared the daylights out of me. So that's Neil's story to the best of my recollection. I would love to hear what y'all think. What could this have been? A Wendigo? Maybe a skinwalker? What was it? Like to know. Thanks, HP.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, a skinwalker, right?
It does, right? I like the fact that he's like, well, I'm just going to lob a .22 round over at it, and it comes that way.
Yeah, not the best idea when you're shooting at Herringon.
So, yeah, right, no joke. So let me run this past you.
Sure.
The idea of it being someone playing a prank is basically not like null and void.
No, I don't think.
You know what I'm saying?
Because I know what you're saying.
Because the minute somebody shot a bullet at you where you were out there, wouldn't you be like, whoa, 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 we're just horsing around, guys.
Yeah,
but exactly. If you heard them shooting for the last hour,
two hours,
now you're going to put the suit on and come sneaking out there to scare them? Absolutely not.
No.
So maybe there's a little bit more to this. Like when you hear stories like that, right, you're like, the idea of it being a fake, unless it's a total lie, the idea of it being a joke is non-existent.
I agree. I mean, that'd be very foolish to go out when you know somebody's out there predator hunting.
Messing around?
Varmint hunting, whatever you want to call it. No, it would not be a good idea to try to scare them.
But it is seeming that we've seen or getting more and more of these stories of slowly, not a lot, but they've trickled in where there's more and more encounters of these crawlers, not in and around town, but literally out in the middle of nowhere. Again, like the Fae or like the stuff with the Glimmer Manor. And it's like people report seeing them where they used to kind of see them closer to civilization.
Yes.
Now it's like you look up and they're just out there. I prefer them closer to civilization. That way I know when I go out in the woods, they're not out there. But
so for your own selfish reasons.
Oh, 100% for my own selfish reasons.
That's fair.
I'll accept that.
Check this out. This comes from a listener. It says, this story is kind of long, so bear with me.
All right.
I will start this off by telling you a bit about myself. I grew up and still live and work in East Texas. I grew up in a small rural town, and I've always loved where I live. I was a quiet kid that didn't speak out much, or really do much for that matter. I just played by myself or sat in the room and played on my Nintendo. As I grew older, not much changed. I kept my circle small, and I stayed to myself in school. In my small circle was a girl. We'll call her Liz for the sake of her identity. Well, one day, I, my mother, and my younger sister were staying at their house for the night to just hang out and watch movies and stuff of the sort. They had quite a large house since their father was high up in the oil field and made lots and lots of money. Anyhow, the guest room, the one I was to stay in, was visible from the living room on the same side of the room as the TV. So, when sitting on the couch, you could see the doorway to the bedroom in your peripheral vision when you were watching television. We were watching horror movies all night, and I, being 9 years old, was not a fan. So I decided to head to bed a little earlier than everyone else and put it off as I'm just tired from playing in the sun all day. The bed in the room was larger than mine at home, so I sprawled out and fell asleep rather quickly. Now, ever since I was a kid, my dreams have always been very vivid, even my nightmares. And I had more than enough nightmares that would wake me up sweating, even trying to run while laying in bed. I often woke up screaming in terror as well. From where I was laying in the bed, I could see the closet. The door was open, and the light was on inside. While the light was rather dim, I could still see all of the objects and clothes inside. I had a night terror that night, and I awoke sweating and moving violently in the bed. When I finally came to my senses, I looked at the clock on the nightstand and barely made out the fuzzy numbers through my tired eyes. It was around 2 a.m. I then sat up in bed and looked to the closet to see an elderly woman standing just under the pale light. I immediately froze, just staring at this lady who I've never seen in my life, and she did the same, just stood there staring back at me. She had a long dress on, white, her makeup was done nice, her hair up, and she was wearing a large black hat, like from the 1800s, with the ribbon and a large black flower on one side. She had a white glove on her left hand, and in that hand, she held a briefcase. Not a large briefcase, but one only about 18 inches tall and just a few inches thick, as if she was traveling somewhere and bringing just a few of her things. She had on black dress shoes, but her legs were covered by the long dress. I closed my eyes and I rubbed them fiercely to make sure that I wasn't dreaming, and when I reluctantly opened them again, she was gone. But I wasn't afraid. Not once did I feel threatened or afraid of what I saw, and I remembered the way that she looked at me when I was telling my mother about it after, waking her and telling her about what I had just seen. And it was like the woman knew me, I said, like she'd known me since I was a child. She had a small smile like a grandmother would have when waking her grandchildren. It was odd to me since I had never seen her. I then asked my mother if we had any old pictures of old relatives that had passed on before I was born. And we did. But none of them matched her looks. None. On either side of the family. So I had no idea what to do other than to just brush it off. But I didn't know what I had in store. I saw her again in the driveway when I was walking back from hunting on the family property, and again when doing laundry, and again when waking up for school. But each time I never felt scared. So I just thought of her as a guardian angel that I could see. I felt special for having her around, even though I never told anyone besides my mother and sister. And then it all stopped. I hadn't seen her in a few years. I was now 18. When I woke up one night paralyzed in my bed, I couldn't move at all. I could barely breathe and could only move my eyes. They danced vigorously around my field of view to see if I could see anything. This time I felt terror, like in my night terrors, only I was awake. And at the foot of my bed, I saw a tall, dark figure of a man standing and staring at me. When I say dark, I mean darker than the shadows in my room. It was so dark that it stood out from the shadows behind it, and I couldn't move. Terrorized, I tried to scream, but nothing came out. I closed my eyes as tight as I could, while straining, trying to get up out of bed, and I finally could. I got up out of bed and ran as fast as I could out of the room. I tried to tell my dad about it, but he blew it off and told me that I was just dreaming. I went to school the next day after only getting just a couple hours of sleep and slept throughout the school day. I got home that day and stayed out of my room until late that night, and I couldn't stand being awake any longer. And the same thing happened again, only this time I was lying on my side, facing the door, and he was much closer this time, only a few feet from my face. I couldn't make out any features at all. It was just a darkness in the shape of a very, very large man. His head reached almost to the ceiling, and his shoulders nearly the width of the doorframe. And again, I snapped out of it and ran to the living room. The next morning, I told my dad the story, and again, he just blew it off. The next night, I couldn't sleep at all. I stayed awake all night. I'm now awake for around 32 hours straight. I went to school and tried to sleep there, but the fear of it happening in front of my classmates kept me from even trying. I got back home and my father had left a list of things for me and my older brother to do around the house. So we were doing our chores and I started feeling dizzy. I was sure it was from the lack of sleep, plus the 90-degree heat and extreme humidity of East Texas in late spring. But I pushed on, and while piling some tree limbs and brush, my sister came out to me and asked if she can borrow something of mine. And I loudly said, no, as I was very frustrated and very irritable. But then my brother asks, who are you yelling at? And I say, my sister's name. And I turn back to where she was standing and point, but there was no one there. So he asks, are you all right? And I tell him what's been happening. And he blows it off just as my father, but still seemed worried that I was seeing things. I told him it was nothing and continued with my chores. Then that night, I lay down to try and sleep, and after about an hour of laying and staring at the ceiling, I eventually dozed off. Just a little after, I woke up again, paralyzed, shaking, struggling to breathe, lying on my side facing the door. But I kept my eyes closed when I awoke, and I felt the feeling. I feel heat on my face, hotter than breath, but not burning heat, like the steam on your face from a hot shower. I opened my eyes quickly, and there's a face only an inch from mine. All I can see is eyes, human eyes, with tiny black pupils and yellow irises. The whites of the eyes were slim. The iris took up most of the eyes, but the whites were red, nothing but tiny blood vessels. And I smell a rotten smell, like feces and rotting meat. And then I see a smile, wide and thin-lipped. Rising all the way to the cheekbones was a smile full of human-like yellow and brown decaying teeth. But there were so many of them, like hundreds of teeth in its smile. I felt my breathing halt and gave it everything I had to say something. Being the age that I was, I simply said, F you, and closed my eyes. And when I opened them again, he was gone. And I never saw him again. But the next encounter was much, much worse. After months, nothing happened, not even a bad dream of any sort. I lied down for bed after a long day of school and my after-school job as a part-time ranch hand on a large neighboring cattle ranch. I fell asleep just as I had for months. I slept like a rock until suddenly I awoke, eyes wide open. I knew this feeling from before, only this time it was worse. I couldn't breathe at all. My body felt like it was asleep, like I had TV static for bones and muscles. The worst part, I was on my stomach. My head was turned to the side, but the pillow covered all of my view, except for a small sliver, and all I could see was the wall closet next to the bed. I felt a weight on the bed on the opposite side of my view, then on the other, as if something put one foot onto the bed and then stepped over with the other foot and placed it on my other side. Then nothing. Just the fear and feeling of TV static inside of my body, almost like a small amount of electricity coursing through me, the weight of the being still there to either side of me. And then, out of nowhere, two hands slam between my shoulder blades and start shoving me into the bed, again and again and again. I felt like a rag doll being beaten and battered, like I weighed nothing. For what felt like 10 minutes, this happened. The whole time, I'm trying to scream for help. When finally a scream so loud I woke up everyone in the house leaves my mouth. Halfway through help, I screamed, "Help!" I stand up and I rush to the corner of my room to grab my shotgun and flip the lights on, but there was nothing there. My dad comes bursting into the room and sees me standing there with a gun and asks frantically, "What in the heck is going on?" I told him what happened, and again, he calls me out as crazy, or again, it was just a dream, until I turned away from him in anger and he saw my back. He stopped me from walking away by grabbing my shoulder and takes me to the bathroom for a mirror and better lighting. My back was completely covered in bruises and red marks, and between my shoulder blades were two large handprint-shaped bruises overlapping each other, as if someone or something had hit me. I never had any encounter again and slept in the living room on the sofa until I moved out a year later. Thank you guys for all you do and letting me tell my story. I've never been able to speak much about it, but I recently stumbled upon you guys' podcast and I absolutely love it. I've always liked the mystical and the unknown. If you guys like this story, please show it on your podcast. I would love to hear what you guys think. I'd love to hear your opinion about it. And if you like, I can share another story as well. Please take it easy, as y'all say. Peace, LD. Well, thanks, LD. That is a creepy story. Now, yours is not uncommon when it comes to these shadow beings. People often talk about seeing them throughout their life. And for whatever reason, teenagers seem to be the ones plagued by them the most. But when it starts leaving physical traces on your body.
Yeah, that's a different level.
That's
right
a different thing, you know, and I'm
sure. That's a whole different, that's poltergeist level madness there.
Yeah, so thank you for sharing.
Doesn't it seem, though, not to cut you off,
yeah,
even like that, some of these cases like this, it does seem like they almost attach themselves to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's, man, that's disturbing.
And I don't know of a good way of getting rid of them other than maybe going to a priest.
Sleep with the lights on all the time.
Getting like, blessed. Yeah. Maybe go to confession if you're Catholic or Orthodox.
Would you be willing to try just about any kind of religious levels, whatever it took? Like, I need an old priest and a young priest. And I mean, like, one of everybody come in here and get this thing out of here. One of them surely will do it.
Well, that's true. You can have a priest come to your house and bless it. That's a thing. There's lots of things you can do. I don't know that I don't know that it would help. But that's where I would start. Well, that's where I would try.
Exactly. And my question is also, too, look around at things that you've got with you. Make sure it's not attached itself to something.
Cursed objects.
Yeah, there you go. Something along those crazy lines like that, too. It's something. It may not just be you it's attached to. It might be something that you carry with you that it was attached to prior to that. I don't know. It sounds very strange. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, I'm going to be discussing some more stuff I think you're going to enjoy about odd things found in our history here in North America, in caves. And I know it might even link up with some of Kyle's favorite stuff as well. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Let's do this, bruh.
Yeah.
I got some stuff I kicked around. Like I said, everybody that's been listening, if you've been listening for any amount of time whatsoever, you know that Mr. Filson is our Giants guy. He loves it, right?
Absolutely.
He's all, and but he's you've loved it forever. Like ever since we found out about it years and years and years ago.
Yeah,
it's always been a little something where he's like, ah.
I first read a book. This was prior to the podcast, so this was before 2013. This probably was like 2012. 2011, maybe even 2009, something like that. I had read a book that somebody gave me by a gentleman named Richard Dewhurst, and I came across it for the first time, and I was unaware of like these mounds I was aware of the mounds, but I wasn't not aware of what was in these mounds. And if you go to like Cahokia and places like this, all over the Northeast, all over the United States and North America, really, there's these mounds. And inside those mounds, they would find these skeletal remains. And they were larger than what you would think, because you got to remember, there's really large humans on the planet today, right? Like mm-hmm. these NFL players, these NBA players, stuff like that. But if you look at the average size of people from, say, like 1865, we're massive compared to them. And I don't just mean fat. I mean, like our skeletal size, everything. The average man in the Civil War, I think, was like 128 pounds.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The average height was like 5'7".
Nutrition.
It's nutrition, right. So these skeletal remains are really old, and they're way bigger than we are. So, like, I remember reading it and being like, what are you talking about?
You're like, how?
Then it turns out there's these accounts from all over the U.S. of these giant remains being found. Now, I'm not talking about insane giants like you see in Troll Hunter and stuff like that, but like 7-footers, 8-footers, 9-footers.
That's pretty
sometimes
insane.
Sometimes 10-footers. Yeah, there's been
double digits, though, because there's been tales where we've talked about, like you're talking about, of 20-footers.
There has been, yeah. But those are very few and far yeah. between. I mean,
I don't remember them being in the States. I remember them being in other countries. I don't remember us finding 20-footers around here, did we?
I think there was a couple.
Were there?
But some of those, there's a lot of speculation when it comes to that. To me, some of those stories sounds like people printing stuff to sell newspapers, right?
To get in on the
giant
stuff.
Because it's so much larger than the other things. But still, 7-footers, 8-footers, 9-footers, 10-footers. Those are quite common. They have lots of things in common, not just their height, but they're polydactyl, meaning they have 6 fingers, 6 toes, double rows of teeth, things like that. Sometimes their skulls are misshapen, elongated. Some are reported as being red-haired.
Horned.
Some are reported to have horns, but they don't just find the skeletal remains, but they find things that go with them, like crowns made of copper. Mm-hmm. Giant crowns, which would only fit a head that's massive in size, twice the size of a human head. They find slippers
just
and
like
sandals.
One size bigger than mine.
Giant. I mean, there's just all types of things, bracelets and things, but they're all in giant proportions, even weapons like axes and swords. So I remember the first time reading it, and we've been on several other podcasts, like with Blurry Creatures and things, where we've talked about this in length. It blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute, how on earth have I never heard of this? Why? And all the AP history courses I took, why?
Mm-hmm.
Everything I've done through school and in college and stuff, I never heard of these stories. I wished I was in school when I had found these books, because I would love to go to the professor
and
or the
like,
teacher
hey.
And be like, hey, man, explain this to me. Because, like, I've never heard of this other than, you know, the Bible, the stories yeah. of Goliath and things. But outside of that, never heard of this. Now, I'm not going to go on a wild tangent like you see on Ancient Aliens, where they're, you know, the Nephilim, and these were the angels that interbred with humans, or these are extraterrestrial. There's no sign of that, right? Like, I'm not saying that that's not a possibility. I'm not going there. I'm saying these are just a giant race of
all
humans.
We have is the evidence of big people. Yeah, that's all we actually
have. They
have
the skeletal remains. And according to lots of conspiracy theorists, the Smithsonian bought up all these remains when farmers were plowing their fields or, you know, making fences, whatever they were doing. They came across these. They would come over. You'd report it to them. They'd buy them up, and they would just shelve them. They didn't put them on display. They hid them. There's even stories of them taking them out in the ocean
mm-hmm.
and dropping them out there. I don't know if that's true, but the stories remain. And not just are these stories talked about from local ranchers and farmers. They're not just talked about in press and ancient and old newspapers and periodicals. The Native Americans themselves have traditions, oral traditions, talking about the wars that they would have with these red-haired giants. And later I might even bring up, because your story takes us to Nevada, about the Lovelock caves.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we've covered that.
We've covered that before, but I might bring it up again. And then it's not just there. There's talks about the Native Americans in the Northeast having these battles up in New York State and places like that with these tribes, they called them, of giants. And when they find some of these remains, they find the giants buried with normal-sized bones,
mm-hmm.
meaning that these giants had 2 or 3 wives, right? Which, if you think about it, if you're going to be a leader of a tribe, it would make sense that the giant was the guy in charge, right?
He'd at least be the head of security.
You want to, I mean, you know, if like, you know, what's a guy? Don Knotts is trying to run a tribe.
You want the shakiest gun in the West?
And then you got
Mr. Chicken?
Brock Lesnar. I mean, who do you think's going to be the controlling things, the shot caller, as we would call it, right?
Well, back then.
So it makes perfect sense. Now,
Yeah.
I mean, it makes perfect sense.
But back then, even more so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because you could just take whatever you wanted.
Take what you wanted.
Yeah.
And not just the Native Americans, but early explorers. They talk about mm-hmm. running into these indigenous tribes, whether it's in Catalina Island. There's other places where they write in their diaries and logbooks that they came across an island and there were people of tremendous size there. Again, 10 feet,
mm-hmm.
double rows of teeth, polydactyl. I mean, if there's all these accounts, how can you refute it?
It all starts, yeah, exactly.
It's in the Bible as well, as exactly. well as other books. So I was not aware of that, and I became really fascinated. And, of course, if you go to my library at my house, there's probably 15 to 30 books on just giants. So one day.
If they're printed and you can find them, you have it in that library.
But you were mentioning on giants. The other day about the logbook you keep. If anybody ever found that not knowing who you were, they'd think this is yeah. this was written by an insane person.
Yeah, yeah. They'll find, I'm going to make sure to put it in like a safety deposit box. So when I die, that's going to be like, oh, my God, what
it
is this?
It reminds me of that book that they found from Del Shao. Remember in yes. the airships? It's
yes.
like people still don't know. Is this just a fancy diary the dude
or is
made
it
up,
real?
Or did it really happen?
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyways, go ahead with your.
Well, I'm glad you dropped because that's where I'm trying to take this. Is as far as look, this is when all this started taking place, and I'm going to show y'all what we found as far as in North America, what was located around these times, and why it's almost like we're okay with finding one thing, but we're not okay when we find another thing at the exact same time,
mm-hmm.
right? So we all know, everyone listening should know, if you don't, if you know of Otzi, right? The Austrian yeah. fella that they found.
He's got tattoos and things like that.
He's got his bow. He's got a little leather pouch. Man, he had all kinds of awesome stuff. Besides the fact that he had a stone point buried in his shoulder that they thought is actually what may have killed him from bleeding to death up there. But he died from exposure. What we're talking about, folks, is this fella was roughly 25, 35 years of age. 5'2" is what they shot him in there at. About 110 pounds when they found him frozen, mummified, but basically frozen up there in the Alps, the Otzel Alps. If you go by what they found, the way they did all the dating and where we are at today, he was 5,323 years old right now. That's how old this person is, right? Otzi is. The reason I bring that up is because there was another thing that we had discussed that had been found, and that's what we're going to jump into. But I want you to think about these times. So drop all the way back into 1940. 1940 in America is a wild time because we're firing up around the time of the war. So we're right in the middle of World War II, right? The wheels are starting to churn. Things are starting to go. Things are rocking around here. So they're guano mining
yeah.
in and all around. They're gathering that stuff up to make saltpeter so they can make black powder or gunpowder. That's what they're going for. Well, in Nevada, there's a ton of caves. And, of course, in caves is where the guano comes from. Hence the reason they found the Lovelock Cave. They found a lot of these caves. And this is where along the time around, the, you know, earlier in the 1900s and all that, even to this time, was a lot of these new discoveries were popping up because of that. As Kyle pointed out, the farmers were finding it all 40, 50 years before this.
Yeah.
Right. They were locating all because of the farming. Well, now as they're collecting the guano and doing the cave exploring, that's when they go to finding it again. Well, this is really interesting for the time it happened because the Nevada State Parks Commission knew what was going to happen, okay? So they knew, okay, we're going to go out, we're going to find all this guano. Well, we know doing that's going to destroy any chance we have of finding any artifacts. So what we're going to do is hire a few people. And we're going to hire archaeologists and we're going to send them into these guano mines before they are mined. So they can retrieve and document and catalog all the artifacts and get them out of there before the guano miners that don't care. You know, of course, we got jobs to do, right? We're fighting the Nazis. We're fighting the Japanese, whatever it is. You know, everybody needs whatever. This is what we're doing. So that's how it started. So they hired a couple named Sydney and Georgia Wheeler. And the Wheelers were sent to basically excavate every cave, any dry cave that they could find in northwest Nevada, the Lahontan Basin. So they get in there and they start going through all this and they're finding great stuff. Now, this is, of course, in the summer, right? So they're in Churchill County and this is in August. You can only imagine August in Nevada out in the middle of the desert. It's going to be pretty miserable, right? We're complaining about the heat. It's going to be ridiculous when you get in there.
No relief.
None.
Not like today where you
but
can
I
just...
bet if you got deep in the caves, like you and I joked about it, Carlsbad's pretty awesome, right? Like if I could just use the elevator up and down and live down there, it would be cool as heck. But...
It's... it's almost uniformly the same temperature year round, regardless of the temperature outside.
It's a big, awesome root cellar. Yeah. That's the way it pops. So, of course, kicking around in there. So Sydney's, you know, going through there, and in Georgia, she's over in one part of it. Well, he rolls an ankle trying to evade a rattlesnake, which is the last thing you'd want to get stumbled off in and get bit by back in the day. Well, now especially, but even then. So he tears it up pretty good, hurts himself pretty doggone good. So they find, this is not in the cave when it happens. They're just moving around when he almost steps on one. So they're like, okay, well, they found the cave that they hadn't been in, and it was close to the road. So they make their way there first, and they're going to wait it out till it gets a little cooler, right? Mm-hmm. They want to wait. So that way, you know, they can get up there by the highway, whichever, whatever. They just want to stay out of the heat at this point. So while they're in there, they're like, let's look around. So that's what they start doing. Well, while they're looking around, they notice they find two mats. Remember, we talk about tool, that marsh grass, right? All that plant. They talked about it for the Lovelock Caves in Nevada. Well, that just so happens what they found here. So that what they find wrapped in it are two bodies. Now, the first body they find doesn't look so great. It's pretty well beat up. You know, it hasn't lasted so long. But there's another one that's buried there slightly deeper, wrapped in this stuff. That one is the one that turns out being really, really well preserved. Not only do they find the two bodies, they find almost 70 artifacts. They find baskets. In these baskets, they find bones. And in there, they also find knives. They find a bunch of cool stuff, right? They believe that what ended up happening was the arid civilization, or the arid climate, is what did it. Just like when they talk about like in Peru and all this up in there, they believe that that's what helped mummify even this whole thing. So what they did when they did the analysis of this mummy was they found that it too was 5'2" tall. It too, but it was a little older. They believe 45 to 55 year old. It had a fractured skull. This is a fella, this man. He had a fractured skull. They said he had an abscess in his teeth. They could tell because of the way it affects, of course, the jawline, the bone, and all that. So they were like, oh, it's going to be very painful. They start going into what he wore. He wore his moccasins. He had a lot of stuff. He had, actually, he was so well mummified that in his stomach, in his intestines, they actually could find fish bones were in there. So he had been in there. So they knew that he had been in and around this area when they were still water and lakes in this area, right? So the Wheelers eventually get up and they end up coming out of there after it got quiet, and they go and they find a car driving down one of these lonely roads, and they get the car flagged down and they get them, right, to take them into town, and they get some help by some residents. They come back out, they get all the stuff that they found, photographed it, get everything done, get it all done, and they bring it and they take it back to the Nevada State Museum. All right. They look over everything that they found. They're like, dude, this is awesome. 1500 years old. I can't believe y'all found this. They leave it at that. This basically lays around. And if y'all do any research, you'll find the Spirit Cave mummy. This lays around until the early 90s, bro. 1994. They start digging around in there again because now they have the ability and the technology to really study what this thing is. What they found out was something that I don't think anyone was prepared for. As I just told y'all, Otzi was found in the top of the Alps, up in the frozen tundra, basically, at 5,323 years old. Okay?
I gotcha.
This thing here is over 9,400 years old.
Wow.
So almost double how long Otzi had been there, this mummy has been in that cave. So, again, that's changing everything of the way we look at North America, of what we've been told, this whole deal. Now, it went crazy, folks. There has been arguments. There has been all kinds of stuff. So they went with the Repatriation Act, okay? So the Paiute and the Shoshone tribe there in Nevada's Fallon Reservation started to do the NAGPRA. So they said, okay, we need to go to the spirit. These are our artifacts. We're gonna bury them, right? That's what we're going to do, the whole thing. Well, after they did a little preliminary findings, now I've not checked up on it yet, but when they first did all this, they weren't going to give him over because they were like, this isn't your people. He was here before your people were here. So I'm sure they've done a little more digging around and all this. It doesn't stop there. There is something that gets even wackier. Now, if you notice from this is Nevada, I'm going to bounce all the way over to Alabama because from that point to all the way up to the east and then even a little in the northwest from Alabama is where they started finding a lot of the giants. They found a bunch of that stuff all up through there. So if you wind this back 100 years, This one was found in 1940. We're going to roll back to 1840. They're in Alabama, in Blount County, Alabama. It's Reverend Crump. Okay, Reverend Crump bought some land there. He bought almost 250 acres from the government. Okay. And yeah. During on this, now here's what's cool. Imagine being able to do this. You go buy some land, it's got five caves on it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how great was that? Nobody was like, oh, yeah, that we'll turn them into this, turn them into that, whichever, whatever. So Reverend Crump goes and he buys all this stuff. Well, when all this went down, well, this was discovered in this one cave in 1840. I'm going to read you some of this stuff from the Crump Burial Cave. Mr. Frank Burns from the U.S. Geological Survey actually went out and did this, and this was published in paper. Now there's controversy around Burns and all them because a lot of that stuff that they were involved in miraculously got hidden, right? As you were talking about the Smithsonian, it's funny. A lot of there's a few key names and key people and key areas of stuff that just straight up vanished. But this is what was published, that on Crump's land in 1940, a fellow named Mr. James Newman and some friends were hunting on the banks of the southern branch of the Warrior River in Murphy's Valley in Blount County, Alabama, in these limestone cliffs when they found a cave 400 foot above a stream, but 50 foot below a plateau. So it's almost perfect the way it set in. So, of course, now here's one of the quotes was said that it was the size. The entrance was so small you could scarcely crawl into it. So, of course, you know, they're young folk. They go get lights. They crawl in there. It's again, like you pointed out, it's cool. It's dry. Everything, fresh air blowing through it. No wonder they lived in there, right?
Yeah, they're close to water source.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, it's
out of everything.
Out of the elements. They have protection. They have a nice even temperature, they're clear, have access to water. I mean, it's everything that you would want.
So this is what they allegedly found while they were in there. This group goes in there, they notice, they're sitting down, they find another large room, which they ended up calling the burial cave. They said, of course, in this article written back in the 1840s, was talking about how it was the burial cave for Aborigines of this area. So that's what they're talking about, the natives. But in this room, they found 8 to 10 wooden coffins made out of black and white walnut. Now, here's what's really interesting. These coffins were made the exact same way of a dugout canoe.
Yeah.
So that's what it looked like. Now, of course, these coffins, again, were sent, gathered up by the men and everybody else, and sent to the Smithsonian. Now, it was believed that they were going to be restored, and turns out they were. And they're actually exhibited in a department of it of prehistoric anthropology where they found these. All of this. Now, here's the sizes. 7 foot long, 14 to 18 inches wide, 2-inch thick lids, but only 6 to 7 inches deep.
How long?
7 feet.
Oh, okay.
7 foot. So nothing crazy.
Nothing crazy, but still large.
But 6 to 7 inches deep. So this doesn't sound like really a coffin at all.
No.
18 inches wide, 7 inches deep, 7 foot long. It sounds more like it's made to hold, I don't know, weaponry or something of some sort of value or bones. Because we do know that some Native Americans would put them up on the pyre or put them up on the sticks, right? You know, and you're elevated. And then all that, and then they collect the bones. Was it more of like a wooden ossuary? Were they collecting the bones to put in there? We don't know. But they could tell that they had been not only hollowed out by stone axes or what they consider maybe like hatchets or anything, but also by fire. Because you could see that
it was used.
Right,
you start a fire and then you put it out and you're able to dig it out.
Here's another strange thing. Both the ends were open.
Oh, yeah.
So it's got a top, the bottom, and sides, but two open ends. Okay. Even stranger, right?
Yeah.
Here's the other weird thing. Around the proximity of these boxes were large numbers of human bones and 12 to 15 human skulls scattered all through there. Now, what they say is they didn't know by looking over, was it something done by prey animals? Or was it something done by the people there?
Like grave robbers or something.
It's one of those things, right? You have no idea. They also found small wooden bowls. They found fragments of bone fragment in and around this area, in and around these coffins. Some of the other stuff they found is 200 pounds of galena. Larger pieces had been grooved. They found more stone axes and stone mauls that they believed had been used as war clubs. excuse me, they also had found they found numbers of arrows and spearheads, get a load of this. So they found stone axes. They also find copper hatchets and a copper chisel 5 inches long and 20 copper ornaments having small holes drilled through them. They found shells, of course, and they always, shells, beads, anything for trading and whatnot, cane. But one of these copper chisels were inside one of the coffins. And that they could tell that the opening from the inside had been chipped away to enlarge it. So they didn't enlarge the outside. They chipped away on the inside to do it. I don't know why. Maybe weather-wise, it's just easier to work in the shade. I don't know. But they could tell that it had been done in a way that all of it had taken place there. What they started judging.
And before you go on, when you talk about the copper chisels and tools, remember, Native Americans were supposed to not know anything about metallurgy,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it seems out of position that these were found in Alabama pre-Civil War by a group of aboriginals that are not supposed to understand metallurgy. Mm-hmm. So how did they obtain that?
Exactly.
Where did they come from? Now, we know that copper was mined up in Michigan, the Isle Royale in Lake Michigan. I mean, for years and years and years, it was mined. 14,000 tons of it. So it's a two-part question. How did this culture, obviously they understood metallurgy because they were able to make these tools. How did they get their hands on them? Mm-hmm. And then how did they, moving forward, forget metallurgy? Like, yes. Forget how to do it?
Just completely lost it.
So to me, I believe that they didn't understand metallurgy, that these were gifts or someone had traded them. Like they were given to him. Like if I gave you some of this, I mean, you know how to build it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make a sense. Then why would they have it? And why only in this small part of Alabama do they have these copper tools?
Exactly. And you could say it was for grave robbers, but then why didn't they take the stuff? Right? It's almost like there were generations.
Maybe they did take stuff. That's why you don't find out the bones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But why would you leave? Why would you bring and have these copper chisels and then just leave them there?
I don't know.
What would you use them? And they said that it didn't look like they were used in the hewing of the coffins, just in the stoneworking around it.
And if you were modern day grave robbers in the 1840s, I believe you said it was, you would be using a metal much tougher than copper. Like I believe copper existed long ago because they didn't understand how to make iron, right? That's why they were using it. But in 1840, somebody wouldn't be using a pickaxe made of copper.
Absolutely not. No. Right. No, you would only, and again, and like you pointed out, and we did what was our very first show ever, second show ever on the podcast ever was on the copper mines.
I would say go back and listen, but don't. It's terrible.
Maybe we always say we're going to redo the copper mine episode. Maybe we should remix it, revamp it.
We definitely should rehash it.
Remastered. We got to remaster the copper mine, right? Is what we got to do. Part D.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So basically they found all kinds of stuff in here that doesn't fit in and it's almost 10,000 years old.
Yeah.
That's what they found. None of this makes sense. But here's what's funny. So they'll talk about this, okay? They put all this in there as they lead to where they found I'll get into more of the stuff that they found in here. They found wooden ladders, like a actually handmade wooden ladder that they'd found later on down in there. Found a lot of what looked like little beads from jewelry. Like, so you could tell that they sat in this area for quite some time, hung out there, did their work there, lived there, did all this. Frank even goes in here and talks about in 1881, he visited another site there in Alabama in this area of finding stuff. And doesn't really sound like they found anything like it, but they did find a small coffin. But it wasn't that size. It's more of like a small box. But it appeared to have been built in the same manner as these coffins. So it's very strange. I think it was one of those things that you could easily kind of tie the two together. The other cool thing is they ended up finding wool. They found in one of these caves in this area, like tightly spun wool, like they had actually made it themselves.
And was it common practice for those Native Americans, whatever tribe it was, to bury their dead in coffins?
I don't believe I've ever seen that in anything. You see all the mounds like you were talking about. They're never in coffins.
No, I thought that was like an Eastern European thing.
That's why I don't believe that these are coffins. I believe they might be something else.
Now, vampires.
Yeah, what they could have been used for, I don't know. But it just seems like maybe they weren't. But the reason I point that out, and I'm glad that you had brought it up, if you take it from 1840 and you back all the way up to 1608 in Pennsylvania, okay?
Yep.
Captain John Smith tells a story about giants in this area. that he and his crew in the Susquehannock, that he encountered tribes of the Susquehannock giants, that he said he came across 60 of these giants that were 8 foot tall while they were traveling up the tributaries on Chesapeake Bay.
The Seataka.
That's right. That's right. This is what he said. Such great and well-proportioned men are seldom seen, for they seemed like giants to the English. These are the strangest people of all the countries, both in language and attire. For their language, it may well beseem their proportions, sounding from them as a voice in a vault. Their attire is the skins of bear and wolves. Some have cassocks made of bear heads and skins. The half sleeves coming to the elbows were the heads of bears, and the arms through the open mouths. One had a head of a wolf hanging from a chain for a jewel, with a club suitable to his greatness, sufficient to beat out one's brains. 5 of their chiefs, were-rances, came aboard us. Of the greatest of them, his hair. This one side was long and the other shorn close, with a ridge over his crown like a rooster's comb. The calf of whose leg was 3/4 yard around, and all the rest of his limbs so answerable to that proportion that he seemed the goodest man we ever beheld. That is direct from the voyages of Captain John Smith of Jamestown, Virginia, 1607 to 1609. So, we know that they were giants then, that he has reported. Then we now know that these cave systems in North America went back possibly 10,000 years, right?
Yeah.
And in this area, they also found, in the area that he's talking about, giant bones when they tilled farmers' land.
Right.
As you're pointing out, as they brought up. It goes on even further into Columbian County in 1900, right? 1900, while 2 young men were driving across the bridge a few evenings ago, it would most likely have been the site of a bridge on Robbins Road, their horse suddenly stopped, refusing to go forward and showing every evidence of fright, although they could see nothing. The reason I point this out is there are reports of haunted areas possibly haunted by the ghosts of the giants whose bones they disturbed.
Well, why not? I mean, if you're going to see ghosts of normal-sized people, why would you not see ghosts of giant people?
So going off this story, it says this, that becoming alarmed, they called loudly for assistance. And when some of the villagers arrived carrying lanterns, they declare they saw a large skeleton standing directly in front of the animal. The ghostly visitor was distinctly visible to both the young men in the buggy as well as the visitors, or the villagers, rather. And since that evening, the apparition has been seen by several people. Its latest being visited on a Sunday night when it appeared to 2 young girls who assert positively that they saw the skeleton, which they declare was at least 8 feet tall. So there were multiple skeletons seen around this area. Now, here's one thing. I've not found one that where they talk about where it seems to be evil. It just seems to be hanging out. The last one that they ended up seeing was a ghost, was a 10-footer. A 10-foot tall,
that's pretty tall
ghost. That's a pretty tall one. Now we get into Pennsylvania, as you'd pointed out then. In Pennsylvania, Greenburg, Pennsylvania, 1920, the famous Mound Builder's Mound in South Huntington Township has suddenly taken on life, and the 8-foot inhabitants of olden days, according to the best informed scientist, lay down their eternal sleep, have just as suddenly started stalking out at night. So strong has become the belief that all is not well within the famous mound, which is 300 feet long and 12 feet high, that Dave Kelly, the high constable and custodian of that piece in and about Gratstown, a mile from the mound, has been asked to investigate. So they go in there and start looking around, and more people have come out saying, now this is of course back in the day, that they had encounters with giant ghosts.
Yeah.
I've never heard of any of that till I started looking in, and you find giant ghosts.
No, but it makes sense.
It makes complete sense, right? And then again, there's more. You get into Sugar Creek Giants in Indiana. This is back in December of 1892, where they unearthed 25 gigantic skeletons by the archaeologist and the students at Wabash College. Now again, why? Where's it at? There has to be something. Somebody get in there in Wabash College, dig in and find out in 1892, the professor and maybe a list of people, and then let's start tracking down those people and track down their family lineage to see if there's been any stories passed on. Was it true? Because it would be real easy for us to sit here, or anyone, and publish something like that from 1892 and say, oh, the students were involved in half the town. How are you going to check that out? Right? You can't. Right. But if you had that where you could trace it down because of the stories told now, of course it would be. So the reason I brought all of this up to get you here is that reason right there, as you pointed out. We found giants. And we found mummies. We've reported on mummies. We've reported on everything of average height of what seems to be natives, right? We've reported on all that, all the indigenous of North America. That's all part of it. But right alongside these findings are findings of giants, stories of possible sightings of giant ghosts, findings of these things that we can't quite put our finger on, but we threw out everything that involves with the giants. Yeah. Every bit of that stuff that we could possibly find that didn't really fit the narrative, we tossed.
That's exactly right, to cover it up.
To cover every bit of it up. So, folks, if you liked a little bit of that, we're going to have a few more crazy stories when we come out. That's about all the time we got for the main segment. I may dig into some more of this. We'll come back more. But let's take a quick break. When we get back, I got something else creepy for you. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
And we are back.
We're back. I love the stories of the giants. I love the because there's so much of it. Like I said, if it was just one story here or there, you might be like, well, I don't know. It sounds fanciful. But when there's literally sightings from every state in America, you got sightings in Canada, you got sightings in Mexico, you got sightings in South America,
yep.
You got sightings in the Caribbean, you got sightings out west on Catalina Island. I mean, there's sightings everywhere. And like I mentioned during the last segment about the red-haired giants that were found in Nevada. If you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a Native American tribe, the Paiutes, right? And they have this legend of these red-haired giants they called the Sitka. And Sitka literally translates in Paiute to tool eaters. And tool is T-U-L-E. And what that is it's a fibrous water plant. And according to the legends, these giants would weave these tool plants into rafts, and they would use these rafts to escape the Paiutes. They would sail across a lake, Lake Lahontan, which is an ancient lake that covered Nevada at the time. And in the Paiute legends, they talked about how these red-haired giants lived in these caves or in these cave systems, like you talked about. They were cannibals. They would prey upon the Native Americans. They would steal your children. They'd steal your women and eat them. Or they would steal their men, or they would use them as slaves, things like that. And so they had this long battle. And according to the Paiute legend, at the last battle, they cornered them into this cave, the Lovelock Cave, which still exists today. They started a large bonfire at the mouth of the cave, and they tried to smoke them out. And they said the whatever ones didn't that died from inhalation of smoke, the other ones that came pouring out like ants, they just hurled hundreds of spears and arrows at them, and they just basically killed them off. And that was the end. It was the extermination of this race of giants. But this war had been going on for centuries, and the legend persists in that area. And now it's become, it's a famous historical place. You can go there and visit it. It's known as Lovelock Cave. It's also known as Bat Cave, Horseshoe Cave, Sunset Guano Cave. And much like you had talked about in the story of the miners looking for guano, they've heard of the legends, but there were these two gentlemen, and they were there, and they were mining for guano because, like you said, they would use it in the manufacture of black powder and things like that. And when they were stripping these layers of guano from the cave, 3 to 6 feet deep, they ended up finding all kinds of artifacts, right? And they believed that these artifacts were linked to this ancient tribe 10,000 or more years ago, this ancient tribe of red-haired, cannibalistic giants. And that was the last time, that was the last hurrah for that tribe. But apparently, you know, at one time, there were all kinds of tribes of giants, and then there were tribes of normal-sized human beings.
Humanoid shapes,
yeah.
Well, and the other part.
People that claim that this is all conjecture, that this is not accurate. There's no accurate evidence for this. At the Lovelock Cave, there's definitely evidence of giant bones. I mean, you can go and research it yourself. They're everywhere. But again, this is where it's kind of insulting. The legends told by the natives, the indigenous people to that area, they're saying, nah, they don't know what they're talking about. They're making it up. Why would you assume that they don't know what they're talking about?
Well, and like you and I had pointed out a long time ago when we first started talking about that, the one key part to that Lovelock Cave is my favorite part of the story, is when they finally emptied it out of all the guano and they found all the stuff in it and they were doing down through there, that during their studies that they could tell that the mouth of the cave had been burned. And they don't mean by like a brush fire or a campfire. They're like, the mouth of this cave has been packed with wood and set aflame.
Right.
They could tell. So how would you even know to do that? You know what I'm saying? How would you even know to make that part of your backstory if you didn't already know the cave was like, you can't lie about something and get lucky. You don't just, not every cave has a fire in it, right? And you just, this is the story you say as you tell exactly what happened. And then years later, they find out that seems to be exactly what happened. And that's the whole thing I was getting at, is there's so many things in here that we have now that we believe in this, but we still want to throw out some other things. Before we get out of here, Kyle, I got to share this with you.
Speaking of caves and cave dwellers.
Oh, what do you got?
Another group of, I was going to say pale crawlers or something rumored to live.
I got another one for you because it's the headline.
In caves. And before you get into that story, if you want to learn more about these skeletal remains, these giants, there's a book by a gentleman named Fritz Zimmerman called The Encyclopedia of Ancient Giants in North America. And there's lots of other books, but this one is the go-to book. It is an amazing, and there are hundreds and hundreds of sightings documented in there, these skeletal remains of, yes, folks, giants. I suggest you check it out. I'll put links to it in the show notes. But yes, back to your pale crawler.
Okay, you're going to love this. And again, it's because of the headline, okay? Lon loves messing with me with his stuff. It's a horse-headed creature. So instantly I'm like, wait, what? This is what it says. Two of my friends snuck out last summer and took a walk listening to music. They decided to sit down on the road and talked a bit, and they both heard a distant scream that sounded pretty similar to an elk screech. I'm going to say bugle, an elk bugle, but for like 1 second in duration. So they turned off the music and saw a huge humanoid horse-looking thing sprint out of the forest into a field, and they said it was running really fast, like 40 miles an hour. They said it was kind of hunched and had a limp, but was lean and muscular, and was completely pale gray and naked. So I said they both sprinted home and get a load of this. Facebooked each other when they got home to tell each other what was to say. They started talking about it, right? So instantly, yeah. I guess they get out of there. This is what they're doing. And they start telling their friend, too. They message their friend, and he finds out, and they say, oh, this. He says, I was in disbelief, so I snuck out on my bike the next night with my other friend, and we met up with the two original that saw this thing, and we went looking for it. We heard the noises they described, and I and my one friend saw a pale Bigfoot-looking creature walk in front of someone's barn light 300 yards away, but we're really not for sure. Now, we continued to do this for a few nights, and one of them was walking to meet up with us alone to go looking for it, and had seen it like five times on the walk there, sometimes 20 foot in front of them. Now, we probably all went looking for six or seven times in total. The last time we went out, we saw it, and it was super tall, 8 or 10 feet, really fast, and had these glowing eyes that you could see from like a mile away. Says, I'm pretty sure I also saw it have these long, greasy locks or strands of hair that were about shoulder length. It looked like a mix between a crawler, Aaron Yeager, Titan Form, and Jeff the Killer. I have no idea who those people are. I have no idea who that is.
I know who Jeff the Killer is because Luke shows me that.
Okay,
stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, I need to get a little fizzy to explain but it. Yarmir, I have no idea.
Who is it? Yarmir Yager and Jeff the Killer?
Yarmir Yager, Titan Form, Aaron Yeager, Meister.
That's Chuck Yeager's brother.
Chuck Yeagermeister's Titan Form. Then it was on pavement, and you could hear, get a load of this, bro, clopping noises like it had hooves. Aside from this, I was on a late night gas station walk later that summer with two of my friends at 3 a.m. And on our way back, we saw something run or hobble across the road about 70 yards in front of us. It looked pretty similar. However, it was much smaller, maybe only 5 foot tall that I could see. Maybe it could have been 7 if it was standing fully upright. But now this is in rural Northeast Ohio. Get a load of this here. It says, I forgot to add that we were walking on the way back to my friend's house on one of these nights when behind somebody's house, we heard a noise. Here we go again. The sound of a baby crying. And it was off in the woods. I couldn't have been mistaken for anything else but a baby. As soon as you bat an eye at that thing, it went crazy. So they went in there, I guess, heard it, and they go, there it is. They see this thing come out. And again, it looks like a crawler, but he says, this thing is going really slow. The dude he was with said, that's not a crawler. That's a Wendigo. So this thing seems like a large bodied crazy thing. Here's the part I like about this story the most. Okay.
Yeah.
It's been seen by children, by kids, by young kids, young people, right? Are seeing it over and over and over. And as we've pointed out, it's like when you're younger, you're tuned in. Right. Everything seems to be it's fresh. And like you'd point out with the shadow beings, it really comes after like teenagers. Just like we talk about, children seem to see fae more and all this stuff. Maybe this thing is this. They know it's not really scared of it.
Yeah.
And it also knows that they're not afraid of it. And they're no harm. They're of no danger. They're not doing anything. So for all these nights, it's just living its best life, just messing with them.
It's true. Very
right?
true.
I mean, because it doesn't seem to be doing anything. But again, what could it be? It's one thing to misidentify, like we say, when it happens in an instant. But if you keep going back and keep going back and you keep seeing this thing, after a while, you're like, yeah, I'm not sure what that is. But I've got a pretty good look at it, right? Multiple times, I got a good look at it.
Yeah.
A horse-headed crawler. So there you go, folks. Some crazy horse-headed crawler in Ohio.
That is beyond bizarre. Never heard of a horse-headed crawler.
No.
But hey, nothing surprises me anymore. Speaking of strange stories, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also call the hotline and leave your story. 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Let's not forget to talk about our amazing sponsors. This summer, spend less time meal planning and prepping with HelloFresh's pre-portioned ingredients that make it easy to get cooking quickly. HelloFresh is more convenient than grocery shopping, but did you know it's cheaper too? It's also 25% less expensive than takeout. Go to HelloFresh.com/expanded16. That's EXPANDED16. And use the code expanded16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping.
And if y'all want to take control of your health real quick, just jump on athleticgreens.com/expanded, and there you're going to get a free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Just use expanded over there on the website there, athleticgreens.com/expanded, to take health or take ownership over your health.
That's right, Cam. And what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Man, I had a bunch of plans going, right? We had a bunch of stuff going, and then, of course, we've had some wacky weather, again, with the rains come through, and you know, it's hit or miss. We never really know. But this week, I've got a few things that I really want to get taken care of, and I may be helping my son work on their office. So him and I have done over, I was over there working on that some this weekend to get ready. We're doing a little repainting. So I replaced some wood. I did some pressure washing and things along those lines. So whatever they got going on that thing, I'm just trying to stay busy and stay out of trouble. You know how that goes. Are we going to have you running all over creation again this week?
I'm going to be running all over creation. I'm going to be getting ready. My mother's birthday is coming up. My wife's birthday is coming up. And of course, Father's Day is coming up. So I got a lot of stuff planned. I don't know what the people are going to do for me for Father's Day. Probably just give me a card and a pat on the back. That's normally the way it goes. But as far as my mother's birthday and my wife's birthday coming up, I got to come up with something fast. So
my kids are gone. My kids, my daughter will not be home for Father's Day, and my son will be celebrating Father's Day on his own. So it will just be, and I'm not hating on it. Yeah, I'm not hating on it at all. That's the way it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
If you're a father and your kids are busy and doing well, then you know that that's your gift. That's everything's done. I'm done. I'm good. So I don't know. You know what I'm thinking about doing? Bowling.
You know, that's funny that you say that. When we went to watch the new Transformers movie, I told my wife no, but I was like, you know what? I'd like to do that. I don't think I've done that in like 2 or 3 years.
Well, we're talking about bowling this next
weekend.
In fact,
I'll tell you, the last time we went was on my birthday about 2 years ago, maybe three, when I picked up Matthew and I brought him and we watched whatever year the Meg came out.
That was a long time ago.
It's the last time I've bowled.
Well, let's go bowling this weekend.
Sounds like fun.
We're doing it. We'll go bowling. We're bowling, folks.
All right. I hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Kip.
Peace, y'all.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.